The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fornelli. That's Bud Elliott. That's Danny Cannell. I'm Chip Patterson. Coming to you live at YouTube.com/Cover3 and everywhere you get your podcasts on demand. Thanks for hanging out. Smash that subscribe. Smash that like and come and join us in the chat, a.k.a. the Cover 3 tailgate, where we are going to be breaking down some spring game headlines from the weekend. Steven jumped in at 9:34 and said, fellas, give me some Cuse spring game talk. I'm going to be very honest, Steven. That's going to need to come later. Haven't gotten to that one yet. Okay. But it's very important to me. You did? Okay. All right.
A little bit.
Okay. All right. So we will, Steven, Bud's got you. It was a weekend that gave us a lot to chew on, of course. Arch Manning. We will get to all of those such things coming up in a little bit. But first, let's begin with the latest updates as we have 8 days remaining for undergraduates to enter the portal. It's so funny. We're not.
Danny was just in the portal, apparently.
I get a battery. My battery's a little low.
Hey, listen. We appreciate that. You take those opportunities. Signs that I'm still not fully immersed in conference realignment updates is when Bud notes important Big Ten defensive linemen hitting the portal. And I'm like, oh, you mean Pac-12 defensive lineman? No. Because UCLA losing its best defensive lineman, Jay Toa, is a Big Ten headline. He could be going to the SEC in a couple different places. Bud, was that when you mentioned pre-show Big Ten defensive lineman hitting the portal? Was Jay Toa from UCLA on that list? The not Pac-12 defensive lineman, but the Big Ten defensive lineman from the Bruins.
Yeah, when I said I thought like Big Ten schools would lose like 4 or 5 good, you know, interior defensive linemen, he was on the list. Simeon Barrow from Michigan State was on the list. Really can't count Philip Beattie because he was already on, you know, like he was already in the portal there. But we'll see if anybody else jumps in. But those are sort of the top two that, like, behind the scenes in the marketplace were very well known. Credit to Michigan State fans for the Red Cedar message board because they skewered me for about 24 hours, and I was pretty diamond hands on this, and I still thought Barrow was likely to jump in. And then, like, they were really cool afterwards. Like, okay, damn. All right. Like, and now, so, like, hopefully we're getting some thumbs up and some likes. I asked for them, and, you know, it's a challenge out there, man. Like, the top schools need big-time interior defensive linemen, and, like, the mid-level schools, they're going to get rated.
Just complete, like, admission here, like Toa going from UCLA. When you were talking about Big Ten defensive linemen, I never even thought of UCLA, USC, Washington, or Oregon players. I'm just, it's not there in my brain yet. So it's like when that happened, I was like, oh, okay, that's one of the Big Ten defensive tackles. Yeah, you notice who I didn't see in the portal yet in Texas, because Texas fans have been telling me they've been coming there for weeks. Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant. Ooh. They still seem to be in Ann Arbor. But
we will get to Michigan's spring game in a little bit. Elsewhere in transfer portal buzz, it is very difficult for me to communicate to a younger college football fan about a world where Alabama kickers would just be out there missing big kicks all the time. You know, like there was a time where Alabama's football success under Nick Saban was in spite of just baffling big game kicking. But that's because we've been living in the era of Will Reichard, who's just been absolute nails for his entire career. So the Reichard era ends and we get Alabama just going to stick to the plan as they got a commitment from the transfer portal from a kicker. And Danny, I think this is legitimately something that we can look at as a positive. Graham Nicholson coming over from Miami, Ohio, the Lou Groza Award winner for the best kicker in the entire country. I've given props, you know, to how much Saban is getting carried over or how much he's, you know, still around. And this has got to be another one where you got to think Kalen DeBoer is just taking one from Nick Saban's own lessons that he's learned in the last half decade or so.
No doubt. You're covering all your bases, making sure you're checking the roster, the depth chart, seeing what the positions of need are. Although I will say Graham Nicholson, a little bit of a unique style, the kicking approach, maybe a little bit off to center to the left. I'm just kidding. I haven't studied this dude at all. I have no idea what he looks like. He won the Lucrosa, so he must be pretty dang good. And no surprise that Kalen DeBoer is going to tackle this one for sure.
Yeah, the key to winning the Lou Groza Award is to make your kicks. So that way, when all the voters just look at the stats, like they go to CFBstats.com to see who's like 33 or 34 on the year, they're like, oh, that guy seems pretty good. So Grant Nicholson got it. How much does a kicker command in the portal, do you think?
Great question.
I don't know.
Yeah, because like, I'm thinking like if you're like a title, like a team that's contending for playoff berth and a national title, and you feel pretty solid everywhere. Like you could argue having a solid kicker or a really good kicker could be a difference maker for you in those games. So I wonder if like, if you're a kicker, if you've got that kind of leverage, how much you can use to that. I don't think you're getting, you know, high six figures, but you could get in the low six figures, I would imagine.
I don't know if anybody's paying six figures for a kicker, but I wouldn't, like maybe mid five figures. I would think.
50 and a car.
That still seems like a lot.
But it's especially to your point, if it's the last piece you need.
That's what I'm saying. If you're the last piece.
Like, have you ever been in that situation where maybe you had like a certain number of chips or an allotment or a budget and it's on your last day? Oh, traveling out of the country, right? You're sitting on some foreign currency. You don't feel like actually exchanging it. So you know what? We're going to go blow it on like however much I can get to use up the rest of these euros. So I could see it. I could see the price going up in situations like that.
Just coming home with collector spoons to give to all the family.
But so how much drop off?
He's like five scoops of gelato, please.
How much drop off is there really between Graham Nicholson and Connor Lighton from Boston College, who's the second best kicker in the portal that you could get probably for a few grand?
I don't know. I think that like, it depends on if it's a guy who can hit, drill from like 50 plus, I would think that they could command a lot. Now, if it's just a guy who's, you know, going to be steady and consistent from 30 to 45, okay, fine. But when you get the big leg guys, you can make the bigger kicks. I think that has a lot more value.
But all right, now this is where I'm like half tongue in cheek, but also a little bit serious. Kalen DeBoer has a great deep passing game. I could see a scenario where it's an offense that can get into scoring position. And then maybe our critique is whether or not they're going to be able to get the job done in the red zone where things get small. Mm-hmm. If you are automatic from 30 to 45, be a good thing for the Crimson Tide. So we'll see. Any other headlines from the latest updates in the transfer portal? Got a couple more names we want to get to, but I don't want to, you know, hog this.
Oklahoma got Hickman, the center from SMU. That was a huge deal because, like, center was a glaring hole for the Sooners. So that's a nice one there. Colorado got Deion Hayes from Pitt, which I thought was a really nice get. They also got Peyton Kirkland from Texas, which not quite as high on him as some. And Cormani called out Deion and said he didn't want to play for a program that's playing for clicks. So,
is that in Marcelo's article? I've got it bookmarked right now.
No, it's a video that Cormani released.
Oh, yeah.
Wait.
Oh, you guys haven't seen this?
No.
Yeah. He's saying he didn't want to play for clicks while he's releasing a video on social media?
On his YouTube page. Huh. He also said he wants to go a real program where he's going to get developed.
Huh. Look, I don't think he's wrong, but I'm also not sure that's the right way to go about it.
Right.
It's like the two opinions I have on this.
This is like me starting a new podcast saying, too many people have podcasts.
He's salty because, and I did see one of the teases. I didn't listen to the whole Q&A because I guess he did a bunch, and this was the clip that went viral where he was saying he wanted to go to a real program, he wanted to get developed, and he didn't want to play for clicks. He did get called out. Like, he was saying, I wanted to clean up my name because, you know, Dion was saying, you don't work hard, you don't study, you're like, you're out of shape. So I'm sure he's a little bitter about that, but I would say the same exact thing we said before. He's got to get it. Like, some guys, it takes them a while to get it. Like, what does it take to be a collegiate, big-time starter, contributor, you know, successful guy at this level? To me, this says he's still struggling to get it. Like, go prove it on the field. Then after you, you know, get all conference or something like that, and then you could go get your revenge, bring out your receipts. But it's I think it's a bad look for everybody. I think it's a bad look for him. Dion, was that what he was tweeting about when Dion said, I got receipts on receipts?
About Cormani, or is that about, okay.
I mean, he's not pulling my receipts. My receipts on him have been 100% correct. So, like, maybe Cormani's receipts are the ones he's pulling. I don't know.
Yeah. He's also, there was also the back and forth, and we will have Colorado spring game coming up this weekend. You know, we'll be talking about NFL draft, lots to get to over the course of the next week or so. But he wasn't wrong when he was defending his program, saying that a lot of these Colorado players that are entering the portal are not players who they had in mind as significant contributors, right?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no, but many of them are ones who, I mean, he's talking about how, like, they're the number one transfer class and how, like, he's bringing in all this Louis. And now I tweeted about how we have, like, a Louis liquidation sale because all this stuff you told us was Louis last year is –
right, but, you know, but that's also, there's some part of that that's like, yeah, he's running guys off, or he's telling guys, like, you're not going to play. I don't think that you can play for this team right now. And so, because it was posed to me on CBS Sports Network, you know, almost with the air of, what's wrong here? And so that's why I wanted to make sure we've got some context with the criticism of, I don't think this is a sustainable way to build a winning football team, you know, but at the beginning, I think a lot of the exits we're seeing in this window from Boulder are guys that were not likely going to be a factor in the for the team in 24.
Agreed. After having a season to watch them. I think the fact that you brought in that many guys last year, called it Louis, talked it up as much as you did, and then flopped as hard as you did, it does call into question, like, does Dion know what the heck he's doing? Right, we've seen him coach and win when he has an insane talent advantage at the HBCU level, right? But we have not seen him, like, be a good in-game coach or a good evaluator of talent so far at the FBS level at all. And, like, now he's talking about, like, how he expects his team to contend for the playoff on Ryan Clark's podcast, like, or First Take, or whatever it is, the latest clip. So, I mean, I think there is a little bit of, like, why do you guys talk about Dion so much? Because other coaches of 4-8 teams don't talk about how they're going to make the playoff. Right? They have a little bit better feel for the quality of player on their team.
One more thing here, because we need to go. I don't want to just yada yada Deion Hayes, okay?
He's the one who said that he didn't want to play for Pitt because the offense stunk, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And he's going to Colorado.
He's going to Colorado. Where the offense won't stink.
He said he wanted to compete. Like, he said, like, he wanted to compete to win.
Will the offense be better than last year?
Will the Colorado offense be better than last year?
Yeah.
I cannot say with any certainty, but I also felt like it was two different offenses as the roster and the depth charts, like, fell apart over the course of the season. You know?
Yeah, it got worse when Sean Lewis left, but the depth chart did also, like, they had real injuries.
Yeah, I don't feel like I've got a full season. I mean, yeah, the first three games, healthy Travis Hunter offense, like, that's a good offense. That is a very capable power conference offense. But I don't have a good feel of exactly what it's going to be. I do think that's incredibly insulting to Pitt and Pat Narduzzi and Pitt football, that somebody who was supposed to be one of your best defensive players is looked at what was happening in spring practice, feels like the team is not going to be competitive. When he walks out that door, you're expecting him to be like, all right, and for my last year of eligibility, I will be taking my talents to Baton Rouge And he was like, I'm taking my talents to a 4-8 team last year. Yikes.
Maybe Pitt just goes full Iowa, scores 13 points a game, and finishes 9-3.
That'd be incredible.
I mean, it's kind of what they've done at times, right? So just go back to that. I mean, the kind of the Kenny Pickett anomaly was just an outlier.
And I haven't pulled the latest headlines on this, but I saw it in passing. Alex Kirshner, Split Zone Duo, mentioned that Narduzzi does not like Deion.
No surprise.
I mean, yeah, not a surprise, but
That's a shock.
He took shots at Deion before Deion even coached a game, right? I mean, it was kind of last offseason. Yeah.
Okay.
He's like, yeah, who are these? Yeah. I forget exactly what it was, but he was not a fan.
Yeah. Like, our editor, college football editor, Jack Crosby, was like, somebody get a microphone in front of Pat Narduzzi right now. Somebody
I still can't believe it's a 3 handicap. That's the thing I'll never get over that until I play with him. I'll get out in the course with him.
Was it at Allegheny? Isn't that the home course?
I think so.
Yeah. God, listen, Pat, he's hammering those drives right now. Just cursing Deion Hayes left and right.
What's the over-under or what's higher? Narduzzi's score on his home course or Pitt's points total in the ACC this year?
Oh, that's messed up.
So his score, 75.
So, I mean, if he shoots like a 78. No.
His two-round score.
Yeah.
His weekend total. Or Pitt's total points in ACC play. That's actually a pretty good.
Let's track that this year.
That's a pretty good prop.
Is he going to let us offer that to him in person? Because we're going to, I mean, if I will say Big Ten and ACC are going on at the same time, I'm not really sure how our talents are going to end up getting split for this. But if we're there, we might need to ask him about the golf game and then lead him like 3 questions into it. Oh, we're talking about golf. Oh, we're talking about golf. Oh, we're talking about golf. Hey, so Pat, what's higher? Your weekend total or
I'll let you ask that one.
I think we'd have to like fight EJ Borghetti for asking that.
And EJ's one of the best.
Yeah, an amazing SID.
So we'll see about that. One other quick thing before we hit the break and then get into our big spring game discussion with some of the headliners coming out of the weekend. It was finally approved by the NCAA, a sort of a sweeping set of rule changes. But among them, at least the one that stood out the most to me, is that the 2-minute warning is here. It's going to start in 2024. Danny, any thoughts on how you think that this will – the impacts or what kind of changes a 2-minute warning is going to bring to the college game?
Other than we talked about this already, I mean, it's just one more morph getting closer into what looks like the NFL, minor league NFL, which I don't think we'll notice. I don't think it'll be a huge deal other than people will use it to complain when there's a 4.5-hour primetime game. They'll say, well, we really need this 2-minute drill. But other than that, you know, you buy an extra timeout late in the game. Probably I'm indifferent. I'm not fired up that it's here. I'm not fired up to say it shouldn't be there. You know, I'm like, all right, let's see what it looks like.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I mean, it's as long as they stick to the idea that it's not really adding a commercial break, it's just kind of getting rid of the going from touchdown to kickoff or touchdown to commercial to kickoff to commercial. As long as it's just getting rid of that because they've got the built-in break already, I'm cool with it. But I would also kind of what you're just mentioning there, it would be interesting to see if they could, you know, just maybe work it in where if it's a 3-score game with 2 minutes left, we don't need the 2-minute warning. Yes. We could just keep the clock going.
That'd be great if they did an optional one late, like in this either half, just if you didn't want it.
So I was thinking about it in terms of like functionally, because we have different clock rules for the final 2 minutes of the half. So the 2-minute warning serves as like a reset. Okay, guys, like pause. And from here on out, we are stopping the clock on first downs, right? Because we had been just letting it run all during the first parts of the half. So if nothing else, I was, you know, looking for some way that this might make sense. Because otherwise, it seems to me just like another commercial break, you know, woo. Mm-hmm. But I can understand like coaches, coaching staff, players, like, okay, guys, let's get our game time score, you know, all the situational awareness stuff. The 2-minute warning does allow for an opportunity to kind of hit reset before you go into the final stages and the different clock rules. So yeah, like I can rock with it.
I think the bigger deal is the tablets.
the tech and headset mm-hmm. communication yeah. are also getting approved in this big set of rule changes. We had some good insight from some coaching staffs in terms of, you know, their own concerns about, you know, trying to make sure they're putting it in practice here in the spring. Have we heard anything else, any other feedback from coaches or staffers in terms of how the implementation's been going?
So we talked about this on the radio show with Dusty. And so Dusty called the spring game because we had like three coaches on the first weekend went by and we were like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know. Cause I like said, has anybody used him in the spring game and didn't notice? So like this past weekend was like, let's pay attention. So he called the Oklahoma game and he was saying it like went off without a hitch. Like they were using it. I think what's going to be interesting, teams are still going to signal, right? I mean, if those, especially the fast teams that signal and get up to the line of scrimmage, they'll have time where it cuts off. I think 15 seconds is going to be the delineator where, you know, the play clock is rolling 15 seconds. Like if you don't get your play call in, you're screwed. Like then you'll have to signal, you'll have to call a timeout. But the teams that signal and go super fast, let's say they're up there lined up and there's 25 seconds, they got 10 seconds. You could have the coach in the quarterback's helmet saying, hey, it's cover two, you know, watch out for the Z, or, you know, that you could still get that voice in your head potentially. And I think some teams might try to take advantage of that, go fast up to the line of scrimmage, get a look, as opposed to looking over and doing that whole thing. The coach will just talk to them. But if you can get caught, though, because it's going to be a rhythm thing. That's why I think everybody has been using it. They have to get used to it because it can be incredibly frustrating. I mean, when I was on the Broncos with Mike Shanahan, it was a very wordy system. And, you know, you'd be sitting up there at the line of scrimmage and or not the line. You'd be like, you know, have your head over the ears. You're looking over the sideline and it'd be like ace right trip for the. And you're like.
Uh-oh. You just call your own play.
Yeah. So we either had to call our own play or finish the play. A lot of formations, you kind of knew what play he was leaning towards. Mm. And so we had to memorize the whole playbooks like for that reason. But then you'd be getting on them. Like you'd be like, get the play in so we don't have to worry about that. So it can be like communication's huge and it'll take some, you know, some time to get those little kinks ironed out.
I felt like Connor Stallions yesterday. I went to my niece's softball game. It's like a 14 and under league, and the team they're playing, every pitch, like the coach is calling out three numbers and every single player on the team is then looking at their wristband to like for whatever the next pitch is going to be. So I was trying to crack the code. I will say they need to do a better job with their code because I was able to figure out after about 10 pitches.
Did you bang the trash can?
I was telling my sister what the pitch was. I didn't, you know, it's 14 and under league, but I was just like fastball change up fast. But it's just, yeah, they need better codes.
Speaking of youth baseball or softball, turned double play.
Okay. On Saturday. Whoa.
Caught a fly ball to the third, kind of a liner, line drive, fly ballish ball to like a weak pop up that was not real high because it's T ball to the third baseman. Caught it, stepped on third base.
Nice.
Oh,
I thought you were saying you.
No.
I was going to ask you how the shoulder was.
Vinny just coming up huge for us.
Yeah. There you go.
That'd be like Bud Cho took out the garbage yesterday. That's right. Nobody had to ask or nothing. It just did it. Right. Proactive.
By the way, if I'm coaching the other team, some uncle is calling out balls. He's calling out fastballs and curveballs. I'm drilling the next girl up. That's all I know. We're going to send
that's
them.
Why, yeah, that's why I didn't want to do it. But it was just it was an easy code to crack.
Yeah, it's all right. We'll install the buzzer on your niece's shirt there next time, and it'll be all good.
My niece is carrying that team, by the way.
Yeah, step your game up.
Scored right. 6 runs. She drove in 4 of them.
Wow. All
right. There you go. All right. So, as we mentioned, lots to get to from the spring game. So, we will begin with a competitive game in Austin. It was kind of we mentioned it on Thursday. Sark was promising that it was going to be competitive and that they were going to hit, and it was all of that and more. Plus, the wins made it really difficult to judge exactly what's going on in the quarterback battle at Michigan. But I do think that we've got a priority order that might surprise some of you who have not been paying attention to it. Lots of concern out around USC's offense. All that and more next.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Danny, Steve Sarkisian was with you on the radio show, and he made a point to talk about, you know, this is not going to be some two-hand touch kind of game. This was a game where starter caliber players played four quarters. I mean, you know, they were like subbing in and out, but, you know, we had like Isaiah Bond making plays deep into this game. You know, we got to see Jonte Cook, you know, and yes, we got to see a lot of Arch Manning. How much Arch Manning? How about 19 for 25 passing for 355 yards and 3 touchdowns, a couple deep touchdown passes, a couple other plays where he was able to use his athleticism, get out and run when there was a broken play. Of all the spring games I watched, this is the one that I probably saw the most minutes of. So I compliments to Sark. They put on entertaining spring, as entertaining a spring football game that I think that we've had so far this weekend. What do you make of what's going on there in Austin?
How can you not be excited, right?
Yeah.
A little bit of concern about the defense. I mean, they did lose those two interior guys. They're going to be shopping the market from that. But boy, from an offensive standpoint, and it wasn't just Arch Manning. It was a lot of the weapons he was throwing to. We saw some of the transfer guys pop.
Golden from Houston came up with some big plays. Amari Nyblack from Alabama. They were doing those little like tight end screens out to the side. I mean, it's a dynamic offense.
Yeah. I might be a total simp for Texas this year.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Texas podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, horns up. All right. Not down. Okay.
If you do, we're all in on Texas. I will be filled with rage.
Yeah, that's right. Nothing makes me angrier than that. But is the defensive concerns, do you have those too? Because there have been times where we've been able to say like, yeah, Texas's pass defense or like the back end of that defense leaves something to be desired. Is there as much that negative side of a big spring game offensive performance for the Longhorns to look at this group?
I think there's some, but Texas has so many really good weapons on offense and the way that Sark schemes it up. And I have pretty confidently as a top five team entering this season. And part of that is the confidence in the quarterback position, right? You have Ewers and you have Arch Manning. And he made some really nice throws. And I think on the whole, he made very few throws that were like, I don't know if I want that one. He took the checkdowns when they were necessary. He fit the ball in a few tight windows, looked pretty accurate to me, like seemed to have really good command of the offense. So I mean, they just have so many weapons. Like Isaiah Bond is just like one of the guys.
Yeah.
He's like a really good, really good player. So I'm pretty confident Texas will find one or two defensive tackles in the transfer portal. Not really sure who they'll be yet, but I don't think Texas boosters are going to let one position that you can go out and buy in the portal stand in your way of maximizing who you are.
Well, Toya's one of them, right?
The what now?
Didn't they get Toya?
Did Toya pop for them publicly?
No.
He visited this weekend.
Then just edit that out of the post.
I started to feel kind of bad for Quinn Ewers because I'm like, man, what a year it's going to be for him. Then I remembered he's got a private jet deal. I didn't feel quite as bad for Quinn. But just imagine that, because last year, I think you probably had a percentage of the fan base, the Longhorns, who probably wanted to see Arch Manning no matter what. Like, but then last year's spring game wasn't great, so you kind of held him off and was like, all right, the minute he has a 3-and-out this year, Longhorn fans will be like, where's Arch? Like, let's get him. Like, the rumblings at home, you'll hear them when he plays, like if he plays in mop-up duty, it's just, it's going to put a ton of pressure on Quinn Ewers. Like that's just the reality. If he plays great, it's awesome. But if he stumbles at all, even last year in the Red River rivalry, he started off with those two picks. He played pretty good overall, but like that game, if that happens and they lose to Oklahoma, like last year, I think most people, like there was a percentage, small percentage, but I think most people are like, oh, Arch is not ready. Mm-hmm. Now, like, and I, to just watching his film, it was not just the highlight plays. It was third down plays, tight window throws, anticipation, like pocket movement. Like it was, it looked like the real deal. I will say this. Last year, we were raving about Malik Murphy. Yeah. You know, like, so it is still a spring game. It is still not real, but he sure looked like the real deal. I think he silenced a lot of the critics who said, oh, he would have been a three-star. Like, I've always been like, hey, let's watch and see him. I've never been a hater, but there have been some haters. Oh, he's just a Manning. I think he silenced a lot of those people for sure, for now.
That's where I think Quinn Ewers has the advantage that we're looking at with Texas's offense. You just have so many dudes. There's just not going to be. I know that they're going to be playing against more NFL defensive talent in conference than they did before. Like, you're not just going to be able to overwhelm the opponents with all of your, you know, capable offensive skill. They can overwhelm a lot of their opponents with all that offensive skill. Of course, the transition here is that they've got to get everything tuned up for week two when Texas plays Michigan, and Michigan has to get everything tuned up for when it might have to trade paint with Texas. And as I mentioned earlier, it was a blustery day. So judging the quarterbacks gets a little bit difficult. But Tom, tell me if you see it this way, because this is not what I expected. But given the fact that Alex Orji and Davis Warren, longtime program guy, were the starting quarterbacks for their each respective team in this game, and that Davis Warren had some of the afternoon's better throws, that it, if we're to look at this, you know, quarterback battle with all these different names, you know, Jack Tuttle has been a little banged up, but it looks like Orji and Warren are tier one guys, and the Jadens, you know, both Davis and Denegal are kind of our tier two. And I did not expect that would be the case when we started talking about the Michigan quarterback battle a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, if you're going by the reps in the spring game, it's pretty clear who the top two guys are, because as you mentioned, Orji and Warren started for the two teams. And even with the backups, Denegal got more snaps with the first team than Jaden Davis is. So I feel like as far as that QB battle is going, Jaden Davis is clearly fourth. And then Denegal's still in there, but based on the reps you saw, it looks like it's Orji or Warren at this point. But yeah, it was kind of a difficult game to really get a great read on, because as you mentioned, it was very windy. And that was the case for Michigan, Notre Dame. Pretty much any spring game in the weekend, or any spring game in the Midwest this weekend, was very, very windy. So, like, it's hard to know, was the downfield accuracy just bad, or was the wind blowing things off? Because, like, Orji, you finally got to see him throw passes, but he was much better on the shorter stuff than anything downfield. And, like, you could, Michigan fans are talking about the defense looked great, and it did. Like, they split up Kenneth Grant and Mason Graham to play on different teams, and both defenses still looked really good. The problem is, they were missing a ton of guys on the offensive line, and they're already replacing guys on the offensive line. So it's hard to know how much of that was just that defense being dudes and that defense going up against a really kind of makeshift offensive line for most of the day. I'm still very, very, they need to hit the portal for a receiver. There's just, there's no difference maker that I saw.
Receivers.
Yeah. Like Colston Loveland is going to be your top target, and that's fine because Colston Loveland's a good player. Like, and we saw he had an impact last year, but as far as, he's not going to stretch the field. So as far as like trying to stretch a field vertically or having a playmaker on the outside, I just didn't see that. So there's a lot of work to be done. They're saying that they're not interested in going for a quarterback in the portal, and maybe that's the case. Maybe depends on what becomes available. Maybe shake a tree, see what falls out. But I definitely think they will be going hard after receivers in the portal after what I saw on Saturday.
I think it's probably worth asking if you're a top quarterback out there who's maybe not a starter, or maybe you're like, you're a good G5 starter. What am I transferring to if I'm transferring to Michigan? I mean, personally, I have confidence Michigan will assemble a really good offensive line this year. But I don't really know what Sherrone Moore's passing attack, just Sherrone Moore, the head coach, is going to look like. Now, I think JJ was probably hurt in the Penn State game, so it's probably not fair to you know, say, well, they only ran the ball there. But again, I mean, it's not like you throw the ball that much at Michigan, and you know, Michigan's receivers right now are, they're going to need multiple transfers at receiver to assemble a room that I would want to transfer to as a quarterback. But yet, like, I watched the rest of this team, man. There's seven or eight games that I have is basically automatic wins for them because they're just going to absolutely destroy the opposing offensive line they play. Like go down that schedule. How many teams have no chances of blocking them? And kind of sneakily here, some of these Big Ten teams that you kind of think are like, oh, they're always good on the offensive line. I've been reading a lot of these reports. I'm not so sure this year. I think like you may have a bit of an offensive line weakness in the Big Ten this year compared to normal standards. And that's not a great recipe when you play this Michigan team. Like, you've seen Jayshon Barham? Dude, that kid, I know he was shot out of a cannon at Maryland, but like he looks great. And that D line is, I just think they're going to overwhelm the majority of teams they play. It's really just, what do you do against Ohio State, Texas, Oregon? Maybe USC if we think USC can play with them. But I think from a physicality standpoint, I have some questions if USC actually can.
TJ Guy, Cole Sullivan. I mean, yep. Just like the players that I was not, you know, because there's so many good players that are proven, these names are not necessarily at the top of my index card when I start breaking out the card to start talking about Michigan's good defense. And yet you see them in this environment, and it might be the offensive line being banged up and them just still shuffling pieces together. But man, I'm going to trust that foundational program development, just the way that Michigan has handled its business, and the way that they've built both physically and also the teaching that's gone on there. It's some phenomenal stuff.
You mentioned TJ Guy, who might be a dude, but also Amerik Kumba is another guy they had on the edge that kind of made some flash plays yesterday or Saturday too.
One other thing I will mention here, and it's really important to remember when you watch spring games. Certain spring games, I think, are designed to make one side of the ball look better than the other. And like sometimes you play a really vanilla scheme. There are some teams I watched over the weekend that like, oh, they're like blitzing, you know. Michigan, that's why I brought this up just now. Michigan is like, they're sending safeties, they're sending dudes from all angles. Like you can tell their new DC, who is like the blitz doctor guy.
Yep.
He, like Florida State, safety blitzing. There are a couple other ones, and like, okay, like you have to kind of take that contextually. You know, another guy that loves to bring it from all different angles, Miami's DC. He did this at Marshall as well. They did a little bit less of that in that spring game. So like, people are like, oh, think about Miami's defense. We're not really that worried about Miami's defense, you know, because they didn't show their whole hand.
To be fair to Wink Martindale, he was only running his vanilla blitzes.
Right.
He was only blitzing from like, you know, 75% of the protractor.
Yeah, he was on the first page of his blitz book. Yeah,
exactly. Well, you mentioned USC in a little bit. They were in action as well. We also got to see, you know, Jackson Arnold, Oklahoma, and that Notre Dame. CJ Carr, Buzz, we see you too. It's not just Arch Manning that was shining out on a day full of backup quarterback performances, plus Texas A&M, Florida State, and more next.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
So after the USC spring game, Lincoln Riley indicated that if the season were to start today, Miller Moss would be his starting quarterback. And if the season starts today and Miller Moss is your starting quarterback and he plays like he did on Saturday in the scrimmage, you're going to throw two interceptions and your backup might throw one too. What are we doing here with USC? Because we went from the highs of the Holiday Bowl to now coming out and looking at this uh, looking at this offense, which if you want to spin the Danton Lynn, you know, if you want to spin that side, that's fine too. But I do think that after year after year after year after year of Lincoln Riley having excellent future pro quarterbacks as a head coach, I'm wondering if this will be the first year where we start to see a drop off in terms of having that advantage.
Maybe the USC defense is just outstanding now, Chip.
I am willing to entertain that as a takeaway. What'd y'all make out of USC?
Without Bear Alexander even on the field because he was nursing a hamstring injury that he probably hurt on his way to the bank or something like that. Cashing those checks. I think it's something to do with that. We talked about this going into the weekend about how it was this one-off game, the perfect game for Miller Moss in the bowl game, 6 touchdown passes. That might have scared off a lot of people. You know what didn't scare off? Jaden Maiva from Final V, transfer quarterback. I think he could press Moss if it doesn't work out, or even if it's going the way it went in the spring game and it continues that way in camp. I don't know. I think this job might be open. And it's not exactly a ringing endorsement when you have to answer if the season starts tomorrow. You know, like he should have just said they're competing for the job. He kind of had to, though.
Yeah. But did you get any USC? A
little bit. I just think the defense looks better coached. There were fewer guys just WTFO, which is encouraging. I don't know if I love USC's defensive personnel, but I think it's an improved unit over what they had, you know, last year. I'm a little torn. Like, I was never really high on Miller Moss as a prospect. But at the same time, I am generally very high on Lincoln Riley's ability to scheme up some points. So I'm just sort of still keeping the faith here in Riley as an offensive guy. And I do largely trust that defensive staff. We'll have to see what they do. There's just not a lot of guys in the defense who are like proven good players, even individually, regardless of the cohesion and coordination of the scheme last year. I want to see what USC does defensively in the portal to bring in a little more depth, because it is kind of a line of scrimmage league in the Big Ten.
Like Bud said before the break, sometimes you could scheme things up in a spring game to make one side of the ball look better. Maybe that's what happened here, because what's all the talk about USC been for how many years? The defense. What's Lincoln's big project been over the offseason, overhauling the defense? Defense looked good in the spring game.
Yeah, I mean, it was Danton Lynn, but it was also, I mean, it's multiple hires. The whole staff has been, you know, totally reworked. So if that's what he was, if that is the message that he's trying to sell in Los Angeles, then that maybe it worked. Now,
USC top 10. Did you see that defense in the spring game? Oh, they're going to be unstoppable.
USC's not a top 10 team.
They will be after that defensive performance in the spring game, Chip.
Wait until they get to the Big Ten, Tom. They'll shut down all those offenses.
For sure.
Whoa!
For sure.
All right. No, boys. What do we see down at what do we see down in Tallahassee? I haven't gotten my arms around this one yet. What's the big buzz coming out of Florida State spring game?
Bama East delivered.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the good news from what you got, Roydell Williams, Malik Benson. I thought you saw those guys produce. From DJU, I thought you saw, like, again, I think he looks like he's always looked like good, but can he be great? And that's the one thing. Like, I feel like I was going in, I felt like he'd be able to run the system pretty good, pretty efficiently. Just want to see kind of where he can take it. But I didn't think we'd get that in the spring game. So I thought, like, you saw executing the offense, he looked good. Marvin Jones Jr. also was good to see him run around making plays, defensive side of the ball. But yeah, I thought so. Like, it's kind of like the transfer portal, which Mike Norvell has done a really good job of doing. I think once again, he's kind of fit the needs and done a good job getting the personnel that fits those needs.
Yeah, I marvel at their ability just to hit. Like, their hit rate on portal guys is just crazy good. I mean, in this class they just took, pretty like confident that almost everybody except for maybe one is like a hit for the purpose expected and taken, right? Like you know, hey, we took this guy to be a good number two type thing. My sources tell Assy have been pretty consistent on DJU. We know what he is. We know what he's not. We don't need to fix him to get out of him what we want. Like, we took him, flaws included, to function in our offense this year. It's a nice kind of one-year, you know, bandit or kind of bridge quarterback to to a room with Glenn and Krummenhoek, who they're really excited about for the future. You know, like the chat, this is a good point. So we just talked USC. USC just got Greedy Vance, corner, nickel guy. I think Greedy Vance is a fairly good player, and like USC fans should be happy. Yet he was losing his job in Tallahassee. Like Earl Little Jr., who they took from Alabama, was beating him out. So, like, that's a kind of a commentary on the quality of the secondary. I do think it's probably the best secondary in the ACC, with all due respect to Louisville and maybe Clemson. You know, we'll see. I think the offense is going to be more inconsistent this year, probably much more heavy run game and more shot plays. I don't think they're going to rely on, you know, this receiving core, which has taken a clear step back, and DJ, who's not real, like, accurate, fast processor guy, to throw the ball as much as they did. So I would expect a lot more run, a lot more play action. And, I think Danny said it. The real surprise of spring is the, like, acceleration of Marvin Jones Jr., because he was not a guy coming out of tour of duty or in the very early part of spring that guys were really, really talking about. In the last 2 weeks, he kind of turned it on and just has been they'll have a shot to have the best defensive end tandem in the league if he plays like he's been playing for 2 weeks. So I think things are pretty happy in Tallahassee. It's a bit of a rebuilding year, but it's probably commentary on the program that they're going to have a shot to win the ACC in what is a rebuilding year. So, you know.
Also, too, from what they need from DJ, like Jordan Travis was perfect for the program. He didn't put up monster numbers, but he came up with big plays when they needed him. Like, he had a knack for that. You know, I go back to LSU, one of the touchdowns early that he ran in. He kind of made a juke, took it against the grain, went backside to the left, something. Well, just found a way to make it. He only turned it, he only had two interceptions, you know, and like those things, those like kind of the big plays on third downs, fourth downs, you know, red zone. That to me is where DJU can prove his worth. And that's where Jordan Travis did. He always came up with those big plays when the team needed them. But you don't need like a volume passer. You don't need somebody who's going to have to throw for 4,000 yards and 40 touchdowns. You just need somebody who can kind of be that leader, get you out of bad plays, you know, make some big plays when you need to extend drives. And that's why I think it's going to be the offense's biggest challenge and Norvell's biggest challenge is drawing that out of DJU.
Yeah.
Mm. In out in South Bend, we did not get Riley Leonard as he continues to recover from that, you know, minor ankle surgery or, you know, follow up adjustment, whatever. See, seems like he's not. Seems like he's carrying himself okay. But man, rest of that quarterback room looks pretty good. You know, CJ Carr, obviously the big buzzy headliner here, Tom, but. I got to think Marcus Freeman and this coaching staff have got to feel really good about where they are this year if Riley Leonard does get hurt, which is something that is certainly with his history, but then also into the future. The Fighting Irish, are they look like they pretty much are set at a quarterback.
Yeah, no, it's again, this is another Midwest game that was very windy, so it's kind of difficult to make sound judgments based on what you saw in the passing game. But just philosophically, as you'd expect with Riley Leonard coming in, like there is much more kind of QB run design built into the offense, at least in this game. Maybe, I don't know if that'll still be the case in the fall. I'm assuming it will be. So you saw that a lot compared to what they did last year with Sam Hartman, who for obvious reasons, like Sam Hartman can run, but they weren't trying to run him very much. So I think that's going to look different with one of the major differences with the Den Brock offense. But you mentioned CJ Carr. He gave glimpses of why, you know, he was rated as highly as he was. But just kind of looking at the way the offense looked and the way the quarterbacks in that room are, like I would put money on Steve Angeli hitting the portal here soon. Mm. Not because it's like, I just don't think if they're going to be running guys, he is probably the most like pocket QB guy that they have, like somebody you're not really going to be looking. So I don't know what his options are as far as even earning like the backup spot, because they might feel like they have to, you know, completely change the offense if they put him in there. So I wouldn't be shocked given teams need QBs and he might not see a path to the starting job anytime soon if he's hitting the portal and before the week's over. But another thing that stood out to me, not just the quarterbacks, it's like there weren't a ton of incredible plays, but there's just more juice to the receivers. Like it's always hard to, like, people always look slow running in South Bend to me to begin with. It's just, I don't know if that's growing up watching Notre Dame and then being slow for like 15 to 20 years, but like, they don't look slow. Like they got more juice. They got more athletes out there. And I feel like that is a good sign going forward. It's just, you know, with Riley Leonard, if with his run game and you get those guys, maybe some quick short passes and let them do stuff after the catch. I think you're going to see Notre Dame looking a lot better in that department. And on the other side of the ball, name to just remember, Kingston Viliamu Asa. That dude made some plays. He's a linebacker. He looks really good.
Nice. Any other Notre Dame thoughts?
Carr is a guy, like, I didn't see him as much in person as some of our other evaluators, but sometimes, like, as somebody just watches recruits in person, sometimes guys just pop for you whenever you're there, right? And Carr, like, every time I saw him in person, was just really good. So I don't know. I'm happy to see that transfer over. I thought he made some pretty impressive throws, and I mean, he's got a guy's real juice. Like we had him as our number six quarterback in the country. I think I liked him a little bit better than Walker White, the guy who signed with Auburn, but still, like, sixth quarterback in the country, top 50 overall prospect. I guess that's nothing to shake at. So, you know, I think Notre Dame is another team with a very nice quarterback room, because I don't think Kenny Minchie sucks either. No. If he were to hit the portal, I think teams would be interested in him. And clearly, like, we know Leonard can play at a certain level. So if you're an Irish fan, I think you're feeling really good about where your quarterback room is.
Anybody want to guess? Riley Leonard played 7 games. He's probably only healthy in 5 because he was pretty banged up when he tried to come back against Florida State Louisville. Anybody want to guess how many touchdown passes he threw last year?
9.
11.
3.
Wow.
I did the same thing. I thought the same exact number. I mean, but he's I wish he was healthy because I do think he needs it. He needs to develop. Now, they're going to run the ball, which we did see him get a healthy dose of running the football. Their schedule's pretty easy, so I don't know. Again, it could be similar to what Florida State we're talking about them. Like, you just need somebody. But I do think you want to utilize his legs. The year before, he had 20 touchdown passes, so it was like maybe it's injury-related as well. But I don't know. I'm a little bit worried about Riley Leonard. I love him as a young man. Like, I got an interview him. I think he's uber-talented. But I am very curious to see, because this is a playoff-caliber team. The schedule's set up to make a playoff run and potentially a championship run. And, like, he's got – we still don't know if he's there as a passer, and we don't know if he's there health-wise. So there's still some question marks. So these younger quarterbacks that got opportunities might be a story to keep an eye on, which is, like, if you're Angeli and you're watching the way this is unfolding, I mean, he knows better than anybody. He's probably seeing Riley Leonard in there, you know, rehabbing and stuff. It's just something to keep – like, that makes that a little bit more complicated, you know, if you're thinking about –
know whether you're going to stick around. Yeah. Interesting. Keep your eye on that one.
What year is Angeli? Good question. Is he close to a degree?
Right.
That could factor into his decision to transfer too. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's. We had a couple people jump into the tailgate before we got rocking and rolling. Kyle says, before I hear the Connor Wegman slander, they did a spring game draft, and he ended up with 2 scholarship wide receivers, a Louisiana Tech transfer, and a second-year guy that had 2 catches last season. But I think you said that you saw A&M, right? And, Danny, you talked to an A&M diehard for about 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah. I was in Dallas. Great. It was great talking to him. He's a big fan of the podcast. We talked about A&M, the Aggies. He didn't want to hear Texas getting any more praise. He's like, who did they play last year anyway? I was like, they didn't go to Tuscaloosa. But but he was fired up about Mike Elko. And I think maybe this is one of those ones, too, where the defense shines because – the head coach is a defensive mind, you know? But yeah, it was not the best game there for Wegman.
I don't really want to buy the receiver excuse for Wegman. I was pretty impressed overall with what A&M showed in the spring game, mostly on the defensive side of the ball. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think Nick Scorton is the best player in the transfer portal.
The Purdue transfer, yes. Right? Yeah.
Followed pretty closely, by the way. We didn't talk Oklahoma yet. Deion Burks.
From Purdue.
That's why that popped my mind there.
So, and somebody else enter the portal today, too.
Purdue did?
Yeah. I don't know if it was a big name, but
I didn't see it yet. I don't know.
I think that A&M defense is going to be pretty nasty. And I think that I'm still pretty high on Wegman's ability, but it was a fairly serious foot injury he had that knocked him out for the season. So I think he's still working his way back for the, you know, from that. The Marcel Reed kid was not that bad in a really, really disjointed bowl game against Oklahoma State. Remember that? I know he had some bad moments, but like he also kind of flashed a little bit. So I'm a little higher on A&M, I think, than some folks are this year. There's going to be some folks that really struggle to block them.
Are you going to find them higher or lower than Oklahoma? Not in a like schedule wins, but if you're just like if we're stacking up the SEC, how would you compare the Aggies and the Sooners?
Well, I think they got a better coach in Mike Elko.
Right.
And I think they have a better D-line than Oklahoma does. I think Oklahoma probably has better receivers, although Noah Thomas is interesting. Linebacker-wise, probably Oklahoma, but A&M's not bad.
But quarterback's Oklahoma.
Quarterback is Oklahoma. I think I'm willing to say that, yeah. But, like, could Oklahoma block Texas A&M?
If they play.
I don't think so.
Right.
So I think Arnold would be running for his life, whereas I think A&M would have some chance of blocking Oklahoma.
Yeah, Deion Burks, an absolute just – monster. I'm sure that was at the top of it. What else did coming with?
Deion Burks kind of stole the show. I mean, you get a new portal guy who's open there and looks like you're early. It's going to be Jackson Arnold's favorite target. Like you bring in, it was a couple big plays, nice post route. Like, you know, there was a 65-yard touchdown pass. Like it looked really good. I think they're still concerned, like a lot of people. They, defensive tackles, another one they would like to improve on. They would like to boost up that position. But I think overall, also, Jackson Arnold didn't play that great in the bowl game, you know, so you kind of needed a good performance out of him, which they did get.
He had an awful start and a good finish, wasn't right. it? Like, it was like a three touchdown, three interception type game. Yeah, where he was actually giving you the best of both worlds. All right. So, what else stood out from the weekend that we want to make sure we highlight before we get out of here?
Blake Shapen looks. Oh, go ahead.
No, go.
Blake Shapen looked super, super competent for Mississippi State. So I think they got to be really happy about that. I think that offense will score on some people. Mississippi State's secondary looks like an absolute dumpster fire, though. So I'm going to need to see Mississippi State add several players in the transfer portal before I can trust that side of the football. It looked very vanilla as well, so maybe we'll give them some grace there. But Jeff Levy in his postgame comments also indicated that they will be needing to address the secondary, and I completely agree. But Shapen, for having guys who were open, he tore them up.
All right, Mississippi State overs. Love it. Don't worry about fixing that.
Tempo, too. Remember, they're running the you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the Whoopsie Daisy King?
No, I haven't watched Virginia yet.
Shout out to our one-time co-host, Hank, for making sure I saw it in the DMs. But Anthony Calandria, 15 for 16 for 102 yards in the Virginia spring game. I'm gonna ignore that YPA, and I'm just going to look at that ruthless efficiency. No turnovers, 15 of 16. He is ready to take over the world.
Kyle McCord hit open receivers for Syracuse, which – we consider say those guys are wide open, and they were. And you know what? Syracuse played a tight end at quarterback last year for a good majority of the season. So improvement. That's good. I think Lenora Sellers, the Gamecocks got a guy. We had heard good things about him last year when he sat behind Rattler at quarterback, and he's kind of cool. Also, he wears the rec specs, which is just right. Like an awesome like Horace Grant style throwback type thing.
That's how he can see all the open field when it's mm-hmm. time for him to take off and run. He's got
are they tactical?
They gotta be tactical.
Tactical rec specs. Now you'll drive clearer than ever before.
I did see Wake Forest had a true freshman quarterback throw three touchdowns. Heklinski. I think Bachmeyer's there as well, who I think got the start, but the true freshman I think had some big throws in that one.
How was the atmosphere?
I didn't see any audience. I didn't see any stadium picks, the crowd picks. So I'm gonna assume it was great.
Have you seen Hicklissy's profile photo on Wake's site?
No.
I'll drop it in the private chat, or actually, I'll drop it in a real chat. If they didn't pull that from a frat composite picture,
just got home at 4 a.m. and he had to be at work at 8.
Wait. Today? Wait. Today is when we're supposed to have the photos taken? Can I borrow a tie? Yeah, black and gold one. That's fine. Yes. That'll work just fine.
100% they're doing the thing like when you let them get your photos taken, you pass the tie to the next guy. Like,
yeah, look, the knot's not even tight.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
because you got to slip it right back off to give it to the next guy.
Give it to the next guy. We'll keep our eye on our young frat star Jeremy Heklinski from Maryland. Tyler Shuck
for Louisville looks really good.
Yeah, he's got a live arm, man. He's been so hurt throughout his entire career in as many stops that being able to see him out there healthy, pushing the ball down the field, that was encouraging.
Jeff Brohm indicated that he was most confident in his quarterback and offensive line. So that's probably a lot different, actually, than what he had last year.
They don't have a Jamari Thrash. They haven't figured out who their like real difference maker is in the passing game yet.
The dude they got from South Alabama is still kind of dinged. And I think Ja'Cory Brooks is not on campus yet or isn't playing yet.
Right.
So those are almost certainly going to be your two unless they add somebody else. But both guys are either not there or just not 100% yet. Malachi Nelson at Boise seems to like actually be a hit.
All right.
So it's notable.
Yeah, good for Malachi. You know?
Illinois' offensive line looked really good.
Good. Okay. Shoot. Tom, who's the transfer that Illinois took?
At tackle?
Yeah.
JC Davis from New Mexico.
Okay, yeah. I was talking to a guy who is a scout, and he was like, this other Power 5 school who we've already talked about, straight dumbasses for not taking that kid and letting
just
Illinois
don't take it. Just leave pass it on him. Just, to take we'll talk out. About it
Wait
next week.
2 weeks,
Bud. We'll talk about it next week.
That's right. Okay. Yes.
Man, Cover 3 listeners, y'all can't wait until we get to talk about all these guys that we actually love in like 9 days once they're locked into their rosters. All of a sudden, you're going to hear all the great things that the Illinois Fighting Illini, scouts are talking about behind the scenes.
Yeah. By the way, I think I have
what?
Hold on. Kill like 2 seconds for me.
Okay.
I'm not entering a transfer portal.
You what?
So I'm going to resign today.
Oh, nice. Hey. All right, good. We NIL came through.
Let's do it.
The collective was able to pull it together. Bud making it official here on the Cover 3 podcast.
Tertullo stepping up. We're staying
good.
Together.
We're good nice. To go. We love to hear it. All right. So again, like I mentioned earlier, big week ahead. We got NFL draft coming up. We've got a few more big spring games that we're keeping our eye on. Oregon, Nebraska, Colorado among them. So we will be getting into all that and so much more. Come hang out Wednesday, 11 a.m. Eastern time. And you can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow him at BudElliott3. You can follow him at Danny Cannell. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you, Scotty Scheffler, for winning me more money.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount+. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.